911 emergency.
I need help.
Hello?
I need help.
Okay, where are you located? 553 Sheldon. Okay, can you tell me what's going on there?
You just hurry up, please. I'm going to die. You're trying to kill me. You already killed my name. You hurry up, please.
Okay, ma'am, I'll start the police that way. Can you tell me what your name is?
Hi everyone, I'm Kevin and this is Just Thought Lounge. Our case today begins inside a family home in the spring of 2019. Hiding somewhere inside, Kiana Griffin makes a terrified and haunting call for help. What happens in the next few hours set the stage for years of further grief and uncertainty. The attacker, a man with a questionable past, no real ties, but quite a few aliases, disappears seemingly without a trace. And the family, left with their grief and in a search for justice, would suffer even more tragedy. Let's take a look. Jacqueline Baber-Bay, the matriarch of the family, owned the house on Sheldon Avenue in Grand Rapids, Michigan. The home is located about a mile from the bustling downtown center of the city. Grand Rapids is considered one of the best places to live in the state, perhaps due to the very high homeownership rates, but it also holds one of the highest community crime rates in the country. The house on Sheldon Avenue was shared with Jacqueline's 47-year-old daughter, Charletta Baber-Bay, and her boyfriend Jay, as well as Kiana, who was 25 years old. Kiana, described as bubbly and big-hearted, was the granddaughter of Jacqueline and a niece to Charletta. On the morning of the 13th of March, 2019, it was a normal Wednesday. Jacqueline left for work at about 8 a.m. as per her usual routine. A call to 911 was placed just before 10:30 a.m.
911 emergency.
I need help.
Hello?
I need help.
Okay, where are you located? I'm sorry, ma'am, I can't hear you. Are you able to tell me where you're located?
No.
Are you at a...
553 Sheldon Avenue Southeast. Please hurry now.
Okay, I got Sheldon. What's the number?
553, hurry, please hurry up.
553 Sheldon. Okay, can you tell me what's going on there?
You just hurry up, please. I'm going to die. You're trying to kill me. You already killed my name. You hurry up, please.
Okay, ma'am, I'll start the police that way. Can you tell me what your name is?
Kiana.
Okay, I've got a call entered, so we're going to get the police started that way, all right?
It takes 7 minutes and 41 seconds for police officers to arrive at the house. Missing is the sense of urgency that might be expected, given the nature of the emergency call they had just received. The dispatch tells them only that a woman inside believed she would be assaulted. Details relayed to the officers via laptops in their cruisers, however, would have provided them with more information. Three officers approach the house. All three approach the front door first, knock several times, and wait with no response. A second officer scopes the side of the house. He tries the side door of the house and likewise receives no response. The third officer walks around the back and notes that there is nothing of interest there either. One of the officers suggests that the call sounds like she could be a 96. A 1096 is a reference to the caller having mental health issues.
This call looked interesting. I'm trying to kill her. It sounds like she could be 96 too, you know?
Sydney, can you try to call back?
By request of the officers on the scene, their dispatch attempts to call Kiana and get her back on the line, but there is no answer. Doors to the house were firmly locked and no noise could be heard inside. The police spent 3 minutes and 42 seconds at the house. And then they leave.
553 Sheldon Avenue Southeast. For female there not breathing, caller says a lot of blood.
A second emergency call is received to 911 from the house just over 2 hours after police left it. This time, the call is made by Kiana's brother, Sanford Cummings, panicked and horrified after entering the house to find his beloved sister unresponsive in a bloody scene in the upstairs bedroom.
911 emergency.
553 Sheldon, my sister not moving.
What's the address?
553 Sheldon, there's blood everywhere, my sister is not moving.
Okay, stay on the line. You said shirt?
Sheldon, 553 Sheldon, Southeast, it's a yellow house, clean, hurry up.
553 Sheldon, Southeast?
Yes. Prelate all ready for a female there, not breathing. Caller says she sees a lot of blood.
All right, caller?
Oh, please.
Ma'am?
I need to stop over here before I go to work till my granny has and her friend was over here outside and came in, and I didn't even come upstairs.
Ma'am, is she breathing?
I'm not a ma'am. No, I'm her brother.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm not a doctor. Please come out. Yeah, somebody stabbed her or something.
She's been stabbed?
Another 7 minutes pass, and then Grand Rapids police are back at 553 Sheldon Avenue. They find Kiana in her upstairs bedroom, already deceased. She had been shot 4 times. In another upstairs bedroom, officers discovered a second body. Kiana's aunt, Sherletta, was lying on her bed under a blanket. It appeared the killer had shot the 47-year-old in the back of the head as she lay watching an iPad propped up on a pillow beside her. The tablet was still playing when police found her, and her earbuds were still in her ears. Shell casings were found on the floor inside the bedrooms. Duct tape that appeared stained with blood was also documented at the scene beneath Sherletta's bed. While searching an alley northwest of the house hours after the murders, a detective captain spotted a hastily tossed box of ammunition. The box of ammunition was next to a plastic bag, which also showed the muzzle of a gun sticking out. The ammunition was tested alongside the casings found in the scene, and a match was found. These were from a 9mm high-point pistol. Detectives searching Sherletta's bedroom found an empty high-point gun box in a dresser that contained men's clothing. Inside the cardboard box, police found the gun serial number and purchase permit, which included the name of the pistol's buyer, a woman. When officers ran the name and serial number, they discovered that the woman listed as the gun's buyer had reported it stolen in July 2017. In addition, this woman had made complaints about a harassing ex-boyfriend of hers, whom she had been dating in the summer of 2017, around the same time that her pistol was stolen. That ex-boyfriend's name was Jay. Sherletta's boyfriend had lived in the home for at least 2 years by then, but the family knew him only as Jay. According to family friends, the two had met in the library. The family says he was Sherletta's first serious boyfriend. At 47, Sherletta had not had any romantic relationships, but she desired to be married and to have kids of her own. Jay was said to be a bit odd, a very quiet man. When he did express himself, he spoke about his belief in various conspiracy theories. He did not seem to have his own circle of friends locally and did not have a job. Despite his eccentricities and unemployment, Sherletta's family accepted him because Sherletta loved him. He also never showed any signs of violence or anything that would have made the family worry. Anya Griffin, Kiana's mother and sister to Sherletta, spoke about Jay 3 years later.
And some people say he was a little strange, he was a little different, you know, but they said that about my sister too. She was quiet, you know, she wasn't a social person. So just because you're quiet and you're a little different than everyone else doesn't mean that you're a murderer. My sister, she loved him. She had never had a boyfriend before.
But this man blindsided all of us.
The couple was apparently very private. They spent most of their time alone in their room. Jay spoke to the others rarely. He did not use social media and no one had his phone number. Further searches of the house on Sheldon Avenue uncovered more about this mysterious Jay. A shoebox stored in the back of Sherletta's closet had a collection of letters between herself and an inmate. Each letter in the jail mail is signed Jay. In one of the letters, Jay explains to Sherletta that his real name is Darrell Brown. The single available photo of Jay was sourced by police from a previous arrest dating to 2013. A neighbor then confirmed that inmate Darrell Brown was indeed the man that they knew as Jay. Armed with the missing man's real identity, police began to piece together parts of the 45-year-old's past.
Reverend Robert Dean believes it was a couple years before the murders that he spotted Brown rummaging through his church's dumpster, found out he was homeless, and let him live for several months in Dean's New Life Church of God in Christ, until one of Brown's girlfriends, not Sherlita, paid the pastor a visit.
She felt he was very nice, very mannerable, but there was that certain little element she was afraid of.
That's when Brown barged into the pastor's office.
I said, well, now I was just talking about you. And he come, well, I forbid her to talk to males. Oh, no, you're not. I said, now, you sit down. I said, it's my office.
Dean said the woman opened her mouth to speak and Brown lunged toward her, prompting Dean to jump up to restrain him and order him to leave the church and never come back.
A pattern of behavior had emerged. A previous girlfriend of Darrell's reported to police his treatment of her in some detail back in 2005. The girlfriend and mother to one of his children told police that he had become angry with her, had tied her up with cords, gagged her, and kicked her in the face, and doused her in lighter fluid, amongst other revolting behaviors. She managed to escape and seek help. Later, the woman decided to drop the charges. She said she still loved him and that he needed help. Help that she did not believe that he would receive if he was sent to prison. Darrell managed to plead guilty only to a misdemeanor. The decision that the police made not to break down the door of the home on the morning of the 13th of March arguably gave Darrell Brown a 3-hour and 20-minute head start. That is assuming that he had already committed the murder within the 7 minutes immediately after Kiana's 911 call disconnected, then left the house before police arrived. If he was not still in the house at that point, he was almost certainly nearby. According to the police report, in the days after the murders, officers canvassed the area for surveillance cameras and found multiple videos showing Darrell's path of travel that afternoon. Cameras subsequently captured him on foot a mile north of the crime scene, 2 hours after the second 911 call-out to the house. Among his post-murder stops was the Grand Rapids Children's Museum. The museum's internal cameras showed him entering the building at 3:24 p.m. the day of the murders, and then leaving 12 minutes later at 3:36. An employee said Darrell had told the front desk that he knew someone inside the building. Museum staff then told him that he could not wander the museum. Around 20 minutes after the Children's Museum stop, another business's surveillance camera in downtown Grand Rapids captured him walking in a different area of the city. Police later discovered one of Darrell's former girlfriends had dropped him off in that neighborhood. But after that, he was gone. Police were unable to track his movements any further. It seems like he just vanished. Initially, Darrell was considered only a person of interest in the murders. Kent County prosecutors charged him with receiving and concealing a stolen firearm. A judge then ordered investigators to pick him up anywhere in the country if he's arrested and extradite him to Grand Rapids on the firearms charge. But they were unable to locate him. A $1,500 reward was issued for any information that led to his location. Over the next several months, Darrell was potentially cited in different states.
Grand Rapids police are extending their search nationwide now for a man who may be connected to two murders.
A search for a dangerous man has come to ATL right here in Atlanta. The FBI wants you to be on the lookout for 45-year-old Darrell Brown.
Yeah, that's right. Now, this is a double murder investigation from Michigan, but authorities believe he may be headed to our neck of the woods.
I want to return now to the story we brought you just a moment ago, a nationwide manhunt for 47-year-old Darrell Brown, one of the nation's most wanted criminals following the gruesome murders of two women in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
The Baber Bay and Griffin family called out Grand Rapids police for its response to Kiana's initial 911 call. In an interview in 2020, they sit in the front room of the family home, surrounded by candles, lit in vigil for their loved ones. They spoke with local media about their disagreements with how Kiana's emergency call was handled.
They didn't care. They was here a minimum of 3 minutes, and they went on about their happy way. And then at 1 o'clock or so, you get another call to the same house.
And the same
and you
officers
come here,
come
now
back.
You got to bring my family out in body bags because you didn't care at 10 o'clock.
You someone is trying to kill me and you won't knock down the door.
You don't know.
She could have been tied up in this house.
Kent County Prosecutor Chris Becker said that they did everything that they were able to do. With no outward signs on the house of a crime underway, say, noticeable damage or blood, they did not have probable cause to break down the door.
It was, you know, quiet and the doors are locked. You know, it's a shut-up house. You know, the house is a very protected Fourth Amendment. They're very, you got to have some pretty good reasons to go in. And, you know, there got to be something that drive them more than just a phone call.
Unfortunately, the family's grief for Charletta and Kiana would only lead to further tragedy when, in July of 2020, yet another 911 call would bring emergency services rushing to the house.
Tonight, new information about the two victims killed in a fire in Grand Rapids this weekend. Crews tell us that a home on Sheldon and Buckley that's just off of Division Avenue caught fire yesterday morning near downtown Grand Rapids.
A local church identified one of the victims as a church elder, Jacqueline Baber Bay. She says the other victim was her 5-year-old great-grandson, Amarion.
Captain Paul Mason of the Grand Rapids Fire Department said that the 911 call reporting the fire came in at 9:02 a.m. The first arriving crew found a heavy volume of fire on the front of the house. There was no one standing out front, yet there were cars in the driveway, so it's a bad sign right from the start. Firefighters found Jacqueline Baber Bay, who is 65, and her grandson E.J. Cummings, 5, in a second floor bedroom at the back of the house. The official cause of the fire was reported as unintentional. The family had held a vigil for Charletta and Kiana the night before, and the house fire had been lit by the candles that had been left out that night. In February 2020, a warrant was issued for two murders against Durrell. Reports of him in various states across the country failed to deliver him into custody. Investigators said, "People have social media, they have phones, they have things that you can connect, that you can trace. But even when Durrell Brown was here, meaning Grand Rapids, he didn't have a job. As far as we know, he didn't have friends, so there were no phones, no social media." In July 2021, U.S. Marshals intensified search efforts by declaring Durrell Brown one of the nation's 15 most wanted criminals. The federal agency believes that Durrell, now 48, fled the state after the murders and may be receiving assistance from family or associates. He grew up and graduated high school in Grand Rapids, but he also has relatives in Wisconsin, Arizona, Ohio, and Georgia. There's currently a $25,000 reward for any information leading to his arrest. He is described as African American, 5'8", and about 180 pounds. He has used a number of aliases in his past, including Daryl Robinson, Carter Brown, Derek Brown, Michael Richardson, Marcus Wright, and of course, just Jay. Anyone with information on Durrell's whereabouts is asked to call 911 or visit silentobserver.org to submit a tip to police. I've left more information about Durrell Brown in the description below. Thanks once again for joining me. I'm Kevin, this is Just Thought Lounge, and I'll see you in the next one.